Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We are going to go some different directions today. Obviously, we have the finals from last night. I'll get into that. Watched a lot of the Diamondbacks game last night. It was one of those nights where I was just back and forth, back and forth. I actually was into the Copa match as well. And so we have that. And then Tommy Smith is going to be with us after Bob Herrig. So Bob Herrig at the U.S. Open at Oakmont. And Tommy Smith, ESPN soccer analyst, is he more into Copa than he is the Euros or the Euros and Copa? It doesn't seem to me that Copa's brought out the best in our country. And the United States is kind of staggering along. So we'll talk with Tommy Smith. That'll be about 10:50 this morning. I want to start with the LeBron James criticism. I was thinking about this last night as I was looking at Twitter and other social media platforms. I cannot ever recall a player getting so much hate and people wanting to see him fail than I have seen with LeBron James. And last night, he shut up. Anybody who's going to criticize him for last night's game and effort, you're kidding yourselves. You really are in a vacuum. You just want to hate on somebody because you're jealous. That's it. If you're going to hate on Kyrie Irving, Jerry Colangelo said something really interesting yesterday. We had him on the show, and he's up in Carmel, so I have to assume either he went to the game last night to be around LeBron and around Kyrie because he's running the Olympic team. Jerry was talking yesterday about how with all the point guards defecting, you know, Chris Paul's not going to play this year, and Steph Curry's not going to play this year for the Olympic team, and several other players, that it's going to give somebody else an opportunity. I think Eric, he said somebody that we haven't really even considered.
Yes.
And I have to believe that player was Kyrie Irving that he was referring to.
I would guess, reading between the lines, that would be correct.
Yes. So, and I have to believe that Kyrie Irving probably has had a phone call, or his agent has had a phone call or conversation in the last couple of days with Jerry. I have to believe that. Because that's how Jerry works. If you've seen him around and covered him as I have through the years, and Eric has too, behind the scenes, there's ways to motivate players. For him to come out and put together the performance he did last night clearly was him making a statement, not just to the haters. And I said yesterday on the show, thought he was shooting entirely too much the other night and took his team out of the game. He shot a ton last night, but obviously he had his rhythm. He had his feel. He's not one of those guys to me that if he goes 0-for-9, that should keep shooting the ball. There's certain guys that if Steph Curry is 0-for-9, keep shooting. Klay Thompson's 0-for-9, keep shooting. Kyrie Irving? No. But last night he found himself in a space that we've never seen out of him. So in my little conspiracy theorist mind, or just how I see guys work, I think last night there was somebody somewhere said to him, look, the Olympics are sitting there for you a month from now, which means gobs of money. What was it I saw last night? Todd Gurley. Did you see the Todd Gurley Burger King commercial?
I did.
There's got to be players around the NFL saying, no way.
Yes.
With a ball cap that says LA on it. Pitching burgers. Todd Gurley.
Welcome to L.A.
Welcome to L.A. And so Kyrie Irving, has Kyrie Irving pitched much stuff?
I don't know.
I've not seen him do many.
Not sure.
If anything.
And I don't know. We can sit here and debate the different tiers of top point guards because there's going to be no Steph Curry in the Olympics. There's going to be no Russell Westbrook in the Olympics.
Right.
There's going to be no Chris Paul in the Olympics.
Right.
Kyrie Irving might be a step down from those guys.
I would Damian Lillard before him.
Oh yeah, but there are so many good point guards in the NBA. Jerry Colangelo has a good problem. I mean, it's nice when you can go not just a little bit down the list, but pretty far down the list, and there are names out there like Kyrie Irving.
Well, yeah, I mean Kyrie Irving has been up and down. I don't love his game, Eric. I'm not one of these guys. I don't love his game. He's a love-hate player, I think. If I have to watch him every night, I'd probably sit here. It's kind of like watching Bledsoe. You know, I mean, I watch Bledsoe, and I've heard the mini LeBron stuff, and that was probably the kiss of death for Eric Bledsoe. I don't absolutely love Eric Bledsoe's game. I don't hate his game. Like, there's very few players that I just don't like to watch play. I did not like watching Markieff Morris in a Suns uniform in any way, shape, or form. Those of you who have seen the show through the years, there's not been a player I've been more negative on because and it wasn't his fault that he was self-destructing before our eyes. It was the organization not having any idea on how to handle this whole thing. It was embarrassing. So I wanted him out of here. It's just the people above had no clue what to do. Kyrie Irving's an immense talent, but is Kyrie Irving about Kyrie Irving? That there's been some of that out there. The LeBron haters, though, that's like every day there's this angle that when it's a slow news day, okay, when it's a slow news day and I see the news cycle and I look up on my monitors and I see the national platforms, what do? They're going to do LeBron James something. They're going to do Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Jets something. They're going to do something around the Dallas Cowboys.
Johnny Manziel blew his nose. He went and he ate McDonald's today. So
Johnny Manziel.
He was spotted in fill-in-the-blank city.
Right.
Wearing fill-in-the-blank, looking not like a football player because fill-in-the-blank.
We're going to have our debate show today about whether Johnny Manziel should be given another shot. And it's the sixth time that we've done it since the NFL draft. Because God knows if we throw anything NFL related involving Johnny Manziel, we'll get something.
Well, and the Johnny Manziel situation really is the perfect storm. Because they rode the Tim Tebow wave for long as they possibly could.
Yes.
And now that we're into the Johnny Manziel never-ending soap opera, they have something to talk about every day.
So LeBron is there every day as a talking point. You can make LeBron.
But I don't know why. I don't understand why all the hate.
Because the decision didn't go away.
Him going
from Cleveland to Miami and coming back didn't go away.
Such old news.
I agree with you.
And give me a second argument against him. That's what I tell people.
I agree with
you. They say, oh, I didn't like the decision. Okay, tell me something else LeBron did since he entered the NBA over a decade ago. That has gotten under your skin.
Going from Cleveland to Miami and back to Cleveland, and now he's in a position where, again, he could walk away and go someplace else. He's set himself up in that space. Last night when he left Kevin Love hanging for a high five, which I thought was pretty funny, that ended up just exploding. Like Twitter lost its mind. Just
someone had a great analogy, speaking of Kevin Love, on Twitter last night. They said, calling Kevin Love one of the big three is like calling Carney Lansford one of the Bash Brothers. I thought that was just so funny. Like,
that's good.
Yeah, kind of.
No, that's good. But here's my thing on Kevin Love. So we'll go over to Kevin Love. He wasn't good last night, right? If I'm the Cavaliers, no matter what happens in this series, if I come back and I win or if I lose, Kevin Love's not back with me next year. And so you know I've been a Kevin Love fan. I was all over the Suns to go chase him. And whether they did or they didn't, you know, they throw stuff out there to make fans believe that they're going after certain guys. All sports franchises will do that. They'll test the waters. They'll go to their people that write nice things about them, and they'll float stuff by them. They'll go to people it happens throughout sports. They'll throw it out there. They'll put it out their talk show guys. You know, they'll float something. Well, what if we did this? And then they run with it. And I've done that. Sure, I've done it. I've had guys that have called me and said, yeah, we're thinking about this. And you know what it is. It's a trial balloon to see what will public opinion say. My view on that has always been, I don't care. I cannot get wound up over what a poll says or what a guy behind a microphone says. If I'm running a sports franchise, I have to go with my gut. I can't just keep a player because he's so popular and I'm worried that we're going to get hit in attendance if he can't play. And you know, the Kevin Love thing, if I'm Cleveland, I've got to find a way to get him out of there after the way that he's played so far. We're going to have Bob Herrick here in a few minutes, ESPN Golf Insider from the U.S. Open. The U.S. Open is this week. And then Tommy Smith, ESPN soccer analyst on Copa and the Euros. That comes up at about 10:50. I'm going to get into Baylor in about 10 minutes because the Baylor story is just, I sent Eric a text yesterday. Love what's going on in Baylor with a bunch of hearts because these people have lost their minds trying to bring Art Briles back as coach. Yeah, if you haven't heard, this is out there. I'm going to get to that here in a few minutes. But over to the Diamondbacks first. So the game last night was a hell of a baseball game. If you watched the Cavaliers and Warriors, that was a great basketball game. Easily the best, that first half, easily the best half of basketball that I've seen in the postseason. Now, I understand it's do or die for Cleveland. I get it. But the entire game was so good. There were so many interesting coaching decisions. Like Richard Jefferson came in off the for the Cavs and played so well for about a stretch of, I don't know, 8-10 minutes. And then the final minute of the first half, he was horrible. Missed a couple layups, made a couple bad passes. We never saw him again, which I thought was an interesting decision by Tyronn Lue. There was some stuff around that game that was so good. On the Diamondbacks end of things, I'm flipping back and forth, and Greinke's given up a run early, but the Diamondbacks are playing terrific defense. They're hitting the ball a mile. They're getting out in front. They've got the lead. They bring Daniel Hudson in to replace Greinke. There's this moment with Greinke. He threw 119 pitches last night. Think about that. 119 pitches. There was a moment where Chip Hale went to the mound, and I'm fully expecting Chip Hale to pull him out of the game. And there was a conversation, and Chip Hale turned around and walked back to the dugout. What have we seen out of the players and the general manager, even in the last week, about the pitchers? Okay, we are hearing this, I wish I would have stayed in the game longer, Patrick Corbin. Dave Stewart, it's the pitcher's fault we're in the situation that we're in. I'm paraphrasing here, but the bottom line is Greinke said, no, I'm going to stick with it. So Greinke just guts it out. I mean, 119 pitches in this day and age. There's old timers will say, I remember back in the day, this guy threw 140. Different era. It's Greinke against his former team. Chip, turn around. I got this. So he goes and gets out of trouble. They bring Daniel Hudson in, and Daniel Hudson wasn't good. Walks the bases full. One-run game. They bring in Brad Ziegler for a five-out save, and Brad Ziegler deserves to go to the All-Star game. Not off of last night's game. Brad Ziegler has put together this incredible run of saves. Like, Eric, we've known Brad Ziegler as a guy that likes to collect baseball cards and is kind of goofy. He's been the setup guy. And to see him evolve into this closer's role with the Diamondbacks the last couple of years, it's a hell of a good story, one.
Almost by accident, too.
Yes.
Like, it's like, default. Yeah, we need a closer, so yeah, we'll try Ziegler there and see how that goes.
Right.
Because he is the opposite of what you think of when you think of a closer coming out of a bullpen. Throw sidearm, lots of off-speed stuff, developed a changeup, ball's moving all over the place. He's not, it's going to hit 102.
No. No, this is not Aroldis Chapman.
No.
It's not Aroldis Chapman coming out. But then there's this play by Michael Bourne that saves the game. Michael Bourne was just a journeyman free agent that the Diamondbacks signed off the scrap heap. And Dave Stewart, you have to give him credit. I think Michael Bourne has made them a better team. Peter O'Brien made a great catch last night. Now, Peter O'Brien seems to me at the plate to be an all-or-nothing guy. He's going to hit the ball a mile or he's going to strike out. And we're going to clear out the building because the wind going through his bat, he swings so hard. But it was a great, great back-and-forth baseball game. So we had two terrific sporting events last night going on. And I think today for the Diamondbacks, okay, you've won three in a row. Here is the spot in the rotation that has been the bugaboo. I think Archie's pitched better since he's come back. I don't think that he should go back to Reno. In a start like tonight following Greinke, okay, you could win four in a row. You could get a little bit closer to the Giants if the Giants could ever cool off, but you'd get closer to the Dodgers. You're not going to make up 10 games, but if you get to July 1 and you're six back.
Well, they're only seven out in the wild card. That's the good news. The bad news is there are like seven teams above them.
Yeah, but I think...
But there's progress. We're seeing, at least in the past few games, we're seeing what we all thought we would see at the beginning of the season.
Good defense.
Yes.
Enough power.
Yes.
Good pitching.
Timely pitching.
I mean, other than Hudson last night, even Hudson on Twitter after the game is beating himself up, which I appreciate.
But for the most part, I mean, if anybody deserves a mulligan, it's Daniel Hudson. He's been a very good setup guy the last couple of years.
So, you know, I'm really interested. I'm going to tonight's game, and I'm going to tomorrow's game. I'm going to go to two games in a row and just take it in because when you play the Dodgers, it's interesting to begin with. Like the fans last night out by the pool, I think we have a picture of that, unless we use it already. The fans out by the pool last night, there's this group that, because it's the Dodgers, they decide they want to get together and protect the pool from the Dodgers coming in and doing what they did a couple of years ago. This is pretty funny, actually, that fans would go to this length. So there they are before the game last night saying, you're not going to pee in our pool. It's not how it works here in Arizona.
Isn't it great when the Dodgers come to town, though? Because there's just, even watching on TV, there's just a different vibe in the stadium.
Well, sure.
Of course, there's lots of Dodger fans there. But let's be honest, when you go to a normal game at Chase Field, when the Diamondbacks are playing the fill-in-the-blank Rockies, Pirates, Padres, there isn't a real buzz. But last night on TV, you could definitely sense that there was a buzz just because the Dodgers were in town.
Well, when you have the Rays rolling through, what do you
see? And the Marlins on a back-to-back homestand.
I mean, come on. Come on. Well, and part of that is because they've been a letdown. There's no other way to put it. The Diamondbacks have been the lead balloon here. This spring was supposed to be, the spring into summer, we were supposed to be looking at a team that was two up, two back, that was all right there for them to capture the marketplace. And they haven't done it. But there's still time. You know, we're not even to June 15th yet. That's tomorrow. Tell me where you're at on July 1st. And to take the first one, let's see what happens with Archie Bradley. I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing, not just with the pitching. Baylor, these people have lost their minds. They have absolutely lost their minds in Baylor. You will not believe the latest there. That's next. One of the more amazing stories going on in sports, this is a time of year where, especially in college, you hear things that are said on the rubber chicken circuit, the booster caravans. Next week I'm doing, Arizona State asked me to do the White Mountain Sun Devil Club event up in Pine Top. It's where big Sun Devil cigars get together, play golf, and Bobby Hurley is going to be there and some of the other ASU coaches and Ray Anderson. They'll have an update on the stadium, so on and so forth. That's what happens in June usually. This is the time of year where we end up talking about things like satellite camps and Jim Harbaugh having fun. And yeah, it's not the busiest of times, but there are things that are interesting. At no point in time after I saw everything that had come out of Baylor, okay, everything that had come out explaining the university's failures with sexual violence. And Art Briles, this is very important. This is the term that I want to make sure you understand. He was suspended, okay? He was suspended on May 26th. He wasn't fired. He was suspended. So when they suspend him, they suspended him, quote, intent to terminate. So their goal was, okay, you're done, and we're going to get this figured out. That was on May 26th. And this was on the same day that everything came out about the sexual violence on campus. The guys that were brought in, players that were just bad guys, for lack of a better way to put it. And what went on there was clearly a culture of, let's just win football games, and we don't give a rat's about what goes on off the field. At least that's how I read it, saw it. Am I overstating this, E?
No.
So, and you're a TCU guy. So
I hate when you say that because, like, you're painting me into a corner.
No, I'm not meaning to. Just for full disclosure.
Yes, I went to TCU.
I think it's fair.
Yeah.
But you're also an enormous college football fan. I think you have a really good pulse of what goes on in college football from a fan's and actually from a media standpoint, news standpoint. You have. I think it's fair that people should know that about
and this story. And what's kind of gotten buried in all this, Brad, is this story is so far beyond college football. It's only circumstantial because it involves a Big 12 prominent football coach.
If this was Grambling State, we wouldn't be talking about this.
I didn't say that, but I just think that everyone is so caught up in the it's a football coach. It's a big time football coach, and they're sort of brushing aside that, like, we're talking about people's lives, like their livelihood, like their mental health, like their physical health.
Yeah.
One of the worst things you can do, you know, physical harm to a woman, whatever capacity that is. And I just sort of think the fact that, you know, Baylor is just pushing Art Briles, like, they need to be pushing him out of the spotlight right now. They don't want to be pushing him back in, yet they consistently keep bringing up his name and trudging back to the fact that, oh, well, maybe we're going to bring him back. And like you said, he wasn't fired. He was just suspended, and it's just all such jargon.
So the reason we're bringing this up today, you're thinking, well, I thought this story was over. No, it's not.
And it won't be.
It's beyond asinine to me that a group of boosters got to the Board of Regents. And when I say got to them, it has to be, we're writing you, let me use my Texas accent here. It's like the Cowboy fans, you know, the Dallas Cowboys are the greatest thing ever, even though they haven't won Jack in a long time. It's the same thing down there in that culture. Well, you know, we're Baylor. We're Baylor. We have Art Briles here. We're top 10 program. Now I write you a big check and I got my decimal point there and I might take that decimal point back.
They're really not a top 10 program, but that's an argument for
top
another
15.
Day. Thank you.
That's your TCU side.
Nope. Facts.
Baylor's Board of Regents met last night. I have to think there's more important things to meet about than bringing Art Briles back. But then again, it's a football school. And Baylor has a great reputation academically. We wouldn't argue that, would we?
No.
Okay, so this is all about trying to figure out a way, a small group of boosters that obviously wield a large amount of money have gotten involved to make this story a national topic today. We are awaiting today the results of a conference call from last night, whether or not they're going to suspend Art Briles for 1 year and then bring him back next year. Of course, what a brilliant idea.
It's like Dave Bliss never happened. That's another
thing. Dave Bliss never happened, sure.
That happens to be the same school, another coach coaching a high-profile program.
So Ken Starr was taken out as the president and resigned as a chancellor. Then the former athletic director, Ian McCaw, is part of this. He resigned on May 30th. So the AD's out, president's out. But there's these guys that are circling around saying, well, we'll just put Art just needs to be suspended for a year. And then we'll bring him back. And never mind all the damage. Like if I'm a dad and my daughter's a senior in high school or junior in high school, and she gets that letter in the mail that says you've been accepted to Baylor, and I'm seeing this stuff go on, or, hey, let's go out and let's consider. And I'm not naive enough to think that this stuff doesn't happen all over college athletics. We're talking about 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old guys, girls together. What happened up at Stanford with the swimmer was deplorable, okay? But it happened at Stanford. It's awful what happened at Stanford. And we hear of sexual assault and charges filed, or he said, she said, players being shuffled out of the program, no longer with the program. Okay, so it was swept under the rug in certain cases. I've seen that through the years. The whole idea that, in this case, that several current and former regents, this is from the Waco Trib from this morning, several current and former regents and high-powered donors are involved in this. Baylor spokeswoman Tanya Lewis did not return voicemails, but said in an email she will release the information from this conference call when she has it. One current regent confirmed to the Tribune Herald that the board would hold a conference call Monday night, could not confirm what the focus of the call would be on. Former Board of Regents Chairman Derry Stone said Baylor has a world-class Board of Regents and is confident in their handling of the situation. Why are they even debating this? Now, is there something legal with Art Briles? And I'm sure, Eric, if we were to pull the curtain way back behind this, you know there's the litigious side of society. You know that there's got to be something on the legal end of things within his contract. Something.
And I wonder if this is a money thing. I mean, I wonder if they're thinking of, are we going to have a huge payout if we get rid of Art Briles, or if there's, because I mean, Baylor's already been dumping money into PR, legal work, all this other stuff. I wonder.
We're also hiring a new chancellor.
Well, and I wonder behind the scenes if it comes down to like, can we save money by keeping Art Briles?
But that, I mean, at the
as
end of
asinine
the,
as that sounds,
that's asinine. You're right. It is. Now, there are people that are coming out now. There's one in this story. Gail Galloway, former Regent Chair Baylor football player, of course, said he supports Briles. One of the finest men I've known is Art Briles. He certainly deserves to be reinstated. This firing is heartbreaking and an overreaction.
Wow.
Overreaction. Are you hearing yourself? We're talking about young ladies who were sexually assaulted. Overreaction. He added the university needs to put the most qualified people back in their jobs to do their jobs. In my experience, we've cured problems within by utilizing the best people to do it. The board needs to take the positive action, move beyond the scars it's going to leave. What about the scars that have already happened? You don't alienate your shareholders, and ours are our alumni. Yeah, you're just talking about this like it's Wall Street versus some girls who were sexually assaulted and it was swept under the rug. Galloway said he has not seen any evidence from Pepper Hamilton, that's the committee, that's the firm rather, out of Philadelphia, but said Briles should not have been fired. Well, he's not technically been fired. He's been suspended. But the whole idea of a board of regents and board of trustees meeting over a football program, a football coach, speaks to, this goes back to my rant yesterday about how Donald Trump's trying to get Ben Roethlisberger and Tom Brady to be up there about the overreaction of athletics. I mean, we want to see football, all right? But this is just crazy stuff. U.S. Open next. We'll go to Bob Herrig at Oakmont. Big week in golf, Father's Day weekend, one of the majors taking place. We'll go to Oakmont next. I'm Brad Sussmann. Let's switch gears now because the U.S. Open gets started. And as we know here in Arizona, even though it's supposed to be 120, and I'm not joking, 120 this weekend, you're going to be sitting around the house. There's no reason to be outside trying to take on the elements. And it's Father's Day weekend. It's perfect time for the U.S. Open. Now, I've read that this U.S. Open at Oakmont this year, I've even seen the word terrifying attached to this course. Bob Herrig, who's been with us in the past, ESPN Golf Insider, joins us from Oakmont here for a couple of minutes. Terrifying, is that the best way to describe this course, Bob, coming into the weekend?
It's one of the ways to describe it. You know, maybe it would be more terrifying if they had to play in 120 degrees, but you know, it's just a golf course that has withstood the test of time. It's always been tough. Going back to the first time they played it here in 1927, and the last time it was here, nobody broke par over 72 holes, and even all the technology that these guys have today and the distance the golf ball travels and all of that, it's still the way this course is and then the way they set it up, it just makes for a difficult test every time. And you know, if there's no rain or, you know, if there's nothing to soften things up, then it's going to be very difficult. The rough is brutal. The greens are very difficult for the members year round. And even for the best in the world, they kind of scratch their heads when they come here.
So no one's going to break par this year, right? You're not expecting that?
Well, I don't expect it, but there is rain in the forecast for Thursday. And that's the great equalizer. If there's enough rain and the course gets softened, even just for a day, you know, maybe there's a day or a day and a half where guys could, you know, get a couple of scores under par and hold on. Then I think, you know, there could be a score under par that wins. You know, one or two under possibly might win because there's likely to be somebody who takes advantage. Mm-hmm. For a day or two if it softens up. And I always point to 04 when actually the temperature is near to 120 degrees here that year, 94, excuse me, the year Ernie Els won. It was very hot that week, and when it gets hot, they have to put water on the greens. And there were eight guys who finished under par that year. But of all the Opens here, there have only been 19 who finished under par, so that was a bit of an aberration. I would expect the winning score to be around par, and if we don't get any significant weather or rain, then over par for sure will be the winning score.
Bob Herrick with us, Oakmont Country Club. The U.S. Open starts Thursday as they get underway there and a build-up towards it. Let me run through some names and just give me a thumbnail coming into this week. Some that are there, one that is not, and you know where I'm going with that one. But let's start with Jason Day. You put earlier on Twitter, battling a cold. He had vertigo a year ago. But there's a lot of intrigue around Jason Day. What are you expecting out of him this week, Bob?
I'd be surprised if he didn't contend. He's only played in 5 U.S. Opens, and he has 4 top 10s and 3 top 4s. And that was at a time when he hadn't broken through yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a year ago at this time, there was a lot of questions about his ability to break through, and now he's won, 7 of his last 18 starts. So I'd be surprised if he was not in the mix.
You look at Jordan Spieth and what happened at the Masters, and now you're back at another major. Is he the story the first couple days to see how he responds in a major? We've seen him come back on the course since the meltdown at the Masters, but is he the story to the first couple days?
I think he's the story no matter what nowadays. Yeah, when you've won 2 majors and he's been, top 4 in his last 5 major starts and let one get away, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him up there this time. I think he excels on really hard courses. I'm not necessarily convinced that he's got any kind of advantage here,
mm-hmm.
but he's got a lot of intangibles going for him that I think work well in this tournament.
We saw Dustin Johnson let one get away last year, and this year he's really struggled putting, but he's hitting the ball a mile and a half. What about Dustin Johnson this week?
Yeah, Dustin Johnson is always a mystery to me. I just never quite know what to make of him. He could have a great week or not. I mean, the thing about him is since last year's U.S. Open, it's not like he actually, he's fallen off the map. He hasn't won, but he does have 12 top 10s and 8 top 5s.
Wow.
He's been there a lot,
mm-hmm.
Just not closing the deal, and had poor weekends mostly is the reason, although he just had a good weekend, good Sunday finish in Memphis for another top 5. But I think maybe for him to win one of these things, what maybe the best way for that to happen is if he comes from behind, shoots a score on Sunday, and everybody kind of falls off, because it was right there for him last year. Bottom line is he should have been in a playoff at the very worst. On 3 putted that final green, and then he was the 36-hole leader at St. Andrews and shot a couple of 75s on the weekend. And he's had numerous opportunities in majors over the last 5-6 years and hasn't been able to get one. So, at some point that starts to take a toll.
Sure. Bob Herrick with us. A couple other questions. Oakmont Country Club U.S. Open gets started on Thursday. Where's Phil at coming into this week for this season? What your view of Mickelson?
Well, Phil's played nicely here of late. I think that's a good sign. I think what's interesting is Phil left here yesterday. He went home to San Diego to be with his daughter, who's got an 8th grade graduation today. And then he's coming back tonight or first thing in the morning, playing a practice round Wednesday. He did that 3 years ago at Marion and did okay, tied for 2nd. But Phil's kind of running out of time. He needs to, if he wants to get a U.S. Open, there's not going to be many more chances left for him. I'm not sure this is a great course for him. The rough around the greens really takes away his advantage. He's a great short game player, great recovery player, and it's a hard place to recover because the rough is so difficult. But, if stranger things have happened, he's playing nicely. I think that's a big factor.
Tiger's not there. He said he's not physically ready. Bob, you're closer than most anybody else in covering him in the tour. Is he ever going to be physically ready? Or is this just going to go on and on with him? Is this the week? Is this the month? Is this the year that he comes back?
Yeah, it's starting to wonder that myself a little bit. I mean, I really kind of thought that he might play next week, his tournament in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
He already ruled himself out of that. It starts to make you wonder, you know, what's going on. Was there a setback? His agent says there was not. Is he having difficulty recovering when he practices? In other words, you know, he plays and practices, and then the next day he doesn't feel good enough to do it. I mean, listen, I commend him for not coming back if he's not ready. It's not going to do him any good to come out here and have the starts and stops that we've seen over the last couple of years. But, you know, is he ever going to be physically ready? I don't know if he'll ever be physically in the kind of shape that he ever was before to be able to play golf at a high level. You just wonder if those days are over with and he has to deal with a back that just doesn't allow him to do it like he did before.
Sure.
And, you know, he says all the right things. He talks about coming back and hitting it better and feeling better. But, you know, until we really can eyeball it, it's going to be hard to know for sure.
Yeah, he had that little media thing at Congressional where he put three in the water, and that was hard to watch. I'm just wondering if you're in that space now where your phone could get the text that this is it. You know, if we're in that zone yet with Tiger Woods, that we're going to get the we've done it, everything we can do, and we're going to shut this down and move on with the next page in our life, or are we just too far out in front on that one?
Yeah, I don't think we're there yet. I really don't. I unless, you know, something has occurred that just that we're painfully unaware of.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is another comeback here that he's going to attempt, and I'm not sure why he would be playing these games otherwise. Why would you be prolonging it? But I do think, you know, now maybe it's several months away still. I mean, that could be. Maybe it's next year before he comes back. But I ever since I saw him in the Bahamas back in December, when it was very dire the way he talked and looked, actually, in terms of the way he was getting around, I always thought to myself, why rush? What's going to be the difference when he's 41 compared to 40?
True.
You know, he might need 8, 10, 12, 15 tournaments to get back in the swing of things. He might need a year of competitive golf before he can be truly competitive. You know, I mean, who knows? That's what we could be facing here. The few swings I've seen him take look different. You know, his follow through looks different. It looks like he's doing something different that might be, you know, required because of the back problem. And but it's all such a mystery. There's so little information.
I'll let you go off that. Good stuff as always, Bob. Appreciate the time. Enjoy the week. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for having me. Take care.
It's Bob Herrig there. Oakmont Country Club U.S. Open starts Thursday with ESPN right there on the spot. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. I'm Brad Sussmat. Brad Sussmat with you, Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our football show is off on hiatus until August 1st, taking a break from that. There's so much going on here in Arizona, even in the dead of summer. It's supposed to be 120 this Friday and Saturday. I'm not joking. 120. And Saturday night, I have a USL game I've got to call. Arizona United in St. Louis. These poor lads from St. Louis are going to roll in here. By about the 60th minute, when it's 115 degrees, they're going to say, get me out of here. You can just see them. They melt out on the pitch. It's really interesting. That'll be over at Peoria Sports Complex. Speaking of Copa, we have the third place match here. Like, I'm expecting very few people, the third place match. I'm not denigrating. It's just, it's going to be a letdown for Copa. But we still have that match coming up next week over at University of Phoenix Stadium. And the Euros are going on right now. And with Team USA still in play, I said, Eric, let's get Tommy Smith on, ESPN soccer analyst. Checks in. He's been on with us before, the ongoing Copa America and also the Euro Championships. Tommy, how are you?
I'm fine, Brad. How are you?
It's good to hear your voice again, Tommy. I'm doing well. I'm curious, are you more into Euros or Copa at this point?
Well, actually, I'm kind of splitting my time. I mean, it's ideally placed because of the time difference in Europe. in Europe, the games are during the day, and with the Copa, the games are in the evening time. But I must say that so far I've enjoyed the Copa games more. There's more flair to them. The South American touch has been better than the Euros. The Euros really haven't warmed up yet. They've been very, very defensive, and we're after seeing one of the biggest surprises that's going to happen in Euros this time around. Hungary just beat Austria 2-0, which is huge. I mean, they're the second biggest rivals in the world behind Argentina and Uruguay, and Hungary went into this huge underdogs. You would have got 14, 15, 16 points on them if it was an American football game today, but they came out 2-0 winners.
In terms of Copa and talking about the South Americans, so the Brazil handball with no replay, Tommy, it was a tragedy, I thought, that it happened. Where do you come down to what happened to Brazil?
Yeah, it's a tragedy, but the thing that bothered me about it most was, I mean, it looks like it was a handball. The only thing that I questioned was how it went so quickly, mm-hmm. You know, normally, a ball of a hitch on the hip like that will take off. Now, if it was a handball, the guy did a great job of disguising it because he got his hand behind his back very, very quickly. I think that there has to be replay. There's not even a question about it. My question, of course, was that even if there was replays on this particular one, was it definitive enough to overrule it? But there's no question, Brad, you have to have replays of some kind in soccer anymore. It's just the game is too quick, the players are too quick, mm-hmm. and the referees just can't keep up with it. The referees just are not as fit as the players are, and they're just being outrun.
It would seem to me, too, it'd be easy to execute in soccer. We're not going to look at, like, baseball has replay, and it takes forever. And it slows the pace of play down. In that handball situation with Brazil, yeah, it took a couple of minutes by the centerman to figure it out, Tommy. But in my view, if you have replay, that's a simple one angle, two angle, three angle, somebody in a neutral booth, and it's done. It's finished. It shouldn't be that hard to put into play.
No, it couldn't be any more simple. Couldn't be any more simple. And I mean, I'm not saying we should have replays. You know, people are saying, oh, yeah, but you're going to kill the game. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. Look, they have it in rugby. It works very well. They have it in tennis. It works very well. They have replays in all sports, basically, and they're working. So why not soccer? I don't say that you have to replay every foul, but you do something about the offside call, or you do something about when a goal is scored. That's all. I mean, the one thing that I feel bad about in soccer is that you're never really sure. I say no matter what happens, you should be sure and you should get the result that is supposed to be there. And I mean, it probably, in all likelihood, it was a handball the other night. And Brazil are gone now. They're out of the Copa America. So it affects that country enormously.
It affects their manager, too. I mean, there's no way he survives, right?
I wouldn't think so, no. I wouldn't think he does.
Yeah. In terms of USA, so what do you make out of the job of Klinsmann so far in Copa, just in Copa and what you've seen?
Yeah, they've done very well. I mean, the last game against Costa Rica, I mean, they were on fire. The fact that Jedling was sent off is certainly not going to help them because, you know, he has been playing very well as a fullback. Klinsmann, if to continue the run, they're playing Ecuador next, and they've beaten Ecuador a couple of weeks ago in a friendly match, but it'll be a completely different Ecuadorian team. And, you know, I think the U.S. will find it hard. Plus, because of the goal that Mexico got last night to draw the game, mm-hmm. it took Mexico on the other side of the bracket. So the United States are now faced with, after if they beat Ecuador, they're going to have to play the winners of Venezuela and Argentina. And then you watched Argentina the other night, saw Messi come on and in 19 minutes scored 3 goals. So they got a very tough side of the draw.
Is this been good for American soccer? We've seen stadiums, even here at the University of Phoenix Stadium. We had Mexico here. It wasn't sold out. I'm not one of those that gets all wound up about every seat being full because the television ratings are what they are. It may be a better experience at home than in the stadiums. But are you disappointed? Or are you pleased with the outpour here in America towards Copa?
Well, it's kind of like a cup that's half, all right, glass that's half full and half empty.
Yep.
Some of the stadiums have been terrible. I mean, to see the top end of a stadium completely empty, that really bothers me. But by and large, they have really good crowds. I mean, that's obviously, Brad, that's obviously their goal, is to play Copa America and play it in the United States. I mean, they would love to get this as the way Copa America goes. Normally, Copa America, for people who don't know, it's only played in CONMEBOL, which CONMEBOL is South America. And, you know, CONCACAF is where the United States play. That's Central America. Mm-hmm. So normally you don't have teams unless they're invited to play in Copa America. And it's always played in South America. So they would like to get it to the United States because obviously there's an awful lot more bang for the buck here than there would be in South America.
Sure, sure. As always, I appreciate your time and your insight, Tommy. Thanks.
No problem. Take care.
Good to visit with you. There's Tommy Smith, ESPN soccer analyst. I always like Tommy. Tommy's just got it straightforward and gets after it. It's good stuff. So tonight we've got OJ tonight. Eric, are you locked and loaded for, that's a wrong term for OJ. Are you into OJ tonight?
I am into it, yes. I still have not watched the back half of episode one.
Yeah.
But I will watch the end of episode one while episode two is DVRing, and I will cram them all in tonight.
I'm going to see Archie pitch tonight. I'm going to go to the ballpark
nice.
And watch him. Did Marty screw up today?
Not yet. I mean, the show's not over yet.
Show's not over yet? Okay, so she's two for two.
Archie kind of screwed up in his last start, so hopefully he'll be better tonight than he was last week.
He wasn't that bad.
He wasn't that good. He was okay. He was okay.
I'm going to be watching the Baylor story today. If Baylor decides to reinstate him, first of all, you're going to melt down, which will be funny.
Well, it's great because Outside the Lines now has free content for all of this week and into next week. So
sure. I mean, what you've got to do is just, for those shows, you've just got to get through like the next 6 weeks. That's it.
Yeah, it's not bad. You can do that.
Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website right now. Pro, college, high school, things around Arizona we see a little different. Stuff that's out there that we like to put together. Jared Cohen is down at U of A today with their baseball team getting ready to go off to the College World Series. You'll see some video and some stories from Jared showing up later this afternoon. And there's some high school 7-on-7, I think, and some other things that people are working on. I'm banging out a column on some of the things around the Valley that have caught my eye as well. Thanks for being with us.